So you've got a culture of people giving and a culture of kindness. Even when people on the first day of work with us, when they come in, we said, this is what the family's about. This is what the business is about, is giving. So there's a blank check for £100. What is it you'd want us to give to? So if you're generous and kind with values and some structure, you can create a culture that I think is reflective of the leadership style you're supposed to see in the Bible. And it is attractive. You know, and I've got evidence to say people like working in that environment. So I had a lot of joy in trying to follow what I think the Bible tells you about leadership and then translated that into running a business.
Welcome, everybody. This is Simon Gilbert with Inspired. Great to be back for another fantastic week of hearing life stories. And, you know, I think we've all had enough of being relentlessly bombarded in the media by negativity that just induces fear and cynicism and apathy and depression and anxiety. And goodness, there's a lot of that going on. So listen, I've got no week this week. You're going to be super inspired because we've got with us the wonderful Peter Vardy. Welcome, Peter.
Sam, it's lovely to be on the show. Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you. So, Peter, I'm not going to tell the story for him, but he's a businessman, he's an investor, he's passionate about leadership and faith in the marketplace, philanthropist, all that stuff. And Joanne O'Connor, who is doing superb work in prisons, contacted me a few weeks ago and said, come on, get Peter on. And I'm really looking forward to this. So go on then, Peter, just your name. I mean, if any of us has bought a car in the last, I don't know, 30 years, it's not unlikely that we went to a Vardy dealership, is it? So tell us the backstory of faith and family. Go for it.
Well, we kind of hope you did go to one of our garages. That was always the hope. Our name is synonymous with Jamie Vardy, the footballer. She sometimes gets asked, are we related? And we're not. And then obviously selling cars over the years. So I'm the third generation, which is always the dangerous one, of car salesmen. So my grandfather, Reg Vardy, which is a name people might know, because that was on the front of Sunderland football shirts and a number of different cities across the UK. So that was my granddad's name. My dad ran that business really and grew it. He was a bit of a genius in our trade anyway, very clever man. So he grew that business from 6 people to 6,000.
Wow.
And then that got sold and I was just coming through the ranks learning my trade and we were all put out of the building, which is quite unusual. And then I started again, with a business in Scotland, whereas I was kind of based anyway, but I came back up to Scotland and started the motor group up here in 2006, yeah.
And I know your father was a full-on, was Reg also a believer?
All church folks. My granddad, I think he was first generation Christian. He didn't want to go down the mines, so he started with a horse and cart. That's how all the kind of things start in Huntley Spring, which is just outside Sunderland. So he didn't want to do that. So he delivered coal, would you believe? So that's what he did. And then that same bit of land became the first dealership, first petrol pump. So my aunts and uncles all served petrol, and then my generation served petrol as well. And sold cars when I was 15. And so it was very much a family business. But yeah, kind of Christian belief running through all of that, kind of brethren into evangelical churches. Mm-hmm. So that was my background. So very fortunate that my grandparents were Christians and my dad's a Christian. And then on my mum's side, when they got married from the west of Scotland, my grandfather and grandmother were Christians as well. So I was very fortunate growing up in between the northeast of England and the west of Scotland, having a great influence from a very strong work ethic, I would say, and a Christian faith, yeah.
Mm. And your dad got a knighthood in 2001, I think, for philanthropy and education.
That's right.
Brag on your dad a bit. You know, there's the official persona, but then there's the man.
Yeah, you're probably asking, I'm a bit biased, but that's a hero of mine. So,
great. Love that.
He did amazing things. He left school with not much of a qualification, which is why I'm sure we all went to university and things. But despite that, he did very well. He was a very good businessman, spotted how to sell cars and make them affordable and passionate about running businesses. A bit of a genius in setting up businesses from one to a lot. No one had really done that. So he was kind of the first to do it. But mum and dad had a great understanding of the value of money. So they could understand how to make it, but could understand how to give it from a Christian point of view, how to administer what God had given them. Just had real gifting in that, and they saw real joy in it. So Dad got involved in schools. Was one of the projects was helping schools in deprived areas. So when the government, it was in Margaret Thatcher days, let business people into schools, it's quite controversial at the time, but to let business people in to help failing schools, could they run them a bit like failing businesses and turn them around? Of course, that was my dad's speciality. So applying what he knew, taking people on from that world into education, they end up having 5 schools and getting the kids to some incredible grades, you know, 46% GCSE up to 97% GCSE in Gateshead area. So it gave children a wonderful start. So I think a recognition of probably that and the motor trade we got to see him get knighted by the Queen, which was pretty impressive in Buckingham Palace. So yeah, great example, mum and dad, to follow and shoes to fill, certainly.
Mm. And so what was your faith journey? Was it just gently by osmosis or dramatic?
I was just thinking the other day, I was in a choir when I was quite small, singing a solo, even though I wasn't really that good at singing. But we went through the church community, which was a wonderful background. And then I became a Christian when I was 13 at a Billy Graham conference up in Glasgow. When you asked to go down the front, that was me. And baptised when I was 19. And yeah, I went to boarding school for a while, so I didn't get to church over those years. So that was a bit tricky. But yeah, I always had a really good belief that God's got a great plan. And a really exciting plan for what he can do, and held on to that, and been very fortunate to go meet lots of good Christian mentors and leaders. So whether it was Steve Wright in Ireland running United Beach Missions, which I did on the beaches and in the summer, looking after kids, or you know, I've had some great Christian influences all the way through business and church life that have really influenced me. So I've been very fortunate.
You mentioned beach missions. I love those. And, you know, you can even be on your own holiday and just pitch up, can't you, and just see this thing go on the beach. And I've joined in before. Tell us highlights from that.
Oh, it was great. But there's a guy called Steve Brown, who, as I said, was a mentor of mine, a guy from Belfast, an amazing Christian guy. His father was as well in Leeds. He's got a great testimony, but he got really stuck, and still is, in the 70s into beach missions. But he got me and a guy called Phil to go to beach missions. We travelled from Sunderland. We went across, and we were two of the northeast lads in Southern Ireland, looking after a lot of kids. It was amazing. Learning how to share your faith at that age with anybody on the street or on the beach was a real lesson. But he was great at teaching us. But we went, I think it was last year or the year before, went back with Steve. He said, why don't you come back over and we'll go around some of the places, we'll have a bit of time together. We'll go and see some of the Christians that you met on beach missions. It's quite interesting because there was a family came to beach missions every day in one town we were in. And they came every day because they didn't know any other Christians in Southern Ireland. So because we landed for the summer, they just moved to where the beach mission was and just had a bit of fellowship for the week. And the guy had been saved by going to a rock concert, coming home, putting the TV on after the rock concert. And then some a Christian channel had come on the TV, and he watched, and he became a Christian in his bedroom. That was his background story. So that's how he got to know Jesus. Then he met his wife, and he's moved to Southern Ireland. And anyway, we were the only people he knew that were Christians. So last year when I went back, Steve said, do you want to go and see that guy in Dublin? I said, and so I recognized the story, remembered who he was. And so I stayed in Dublin the night before I flew back. And it was a Sunday morning. So Steve said, well, we'll meet in this hotel because that's where this guy is now. He's a pastor. I said, oh, right, okay, wow, that's a bit of a turnaround. And so we walked in and he said, you might get a bit of a surprise. So I went down, didn't know what I was expecting. So I got in early because I kind of do. And I realised I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, everybody's not really from Dublin here. This is not really what I was expecting. Anyway, they were all Brazilians. And there were 200 people in the church, mostly Brazilians. And then out walked the guy who was at the beach mission, who became a Christian in his bedroom after a rock concert with his kids. And his kids was translating from English into Spanish. And he was the pastor of this church. And it was just amazing. And then the other one we went to another town. I remember going back in time. And when we went to beach mission that Sunday, we went to the local Christian person, because there was two of them. Mm. We went to their house on the Sunday to have church, basically, because there was only two of them. We met in their conservatory, so there was like 20 of us and the two local Christians. So they loved us coming because the church suddenly felt like a church. So I went back to the guys. We actually drove to the guy's house. I remember when I was 18, 19, getting out and going into the house, and it's just being us and these two people. And I said, oh, can I come? And he said, no, I'd rather show you something else. I said, oh, great. He said, can I show you where we now meet for church? And we drove. This is 20 years later. We drove around the corner, and this is fabulous church building built with a sanctuary in it and all the buildings. And it just says how many people are now in the church and how young people come now every year and use the upstairs loft and minister in the town. So it was really amazing to see God using you just as a small part in the bigger picture, isn't it? And just being faithful with what you give in that day or the thing you sent on, because you never quite know what God's going to do. So it was really encouraging all those years to see, I suppose, we were miniature missionaries when we were small, and what God managed to do with all of us doing a little bit. So it was a great, great story to see the effect of small things you can do, yeah, and playing the part in the big picture.
And we sow seeds, don't we? And we don't need to know. I mean, we'll know in glory. I think that'd be one of the biggest joys to see how God has woven the tapestry of all these seeds that have flown out through whatever we've done. I hope that's an encouragement to everyone. And also, I think, as you mentioned, being mentored by Steve, I think that's one of the greatest gifts you can receive from someone, and you can also give someone. So if you're listening right now and you haven't got a mentor, just think about who's older, a bit further along the tracks, who could invest in you, and ask them. I think there's no bigger privilege than people come and ask me to mentor them. I mean, you can't say yes to everyone, but it's like, what a privilege to invest something of what you've learned into the next generation. And I'm gagging still, you know, when I came back from Burundi, I was like, who are the older guys that I'm going to get in my town, for example?
It does make a big difference, doesn't it? I'm speaking to somebody at the minute about starting them mentoring me again now. So I think got a call maybe later on this afternoon to say, look, he's a guy in the States. Could you mentor me through a period and how would it work with you? Because my dad's been the biggest mentor, but I've always had someone else in the last maybe 10 years where I'd speak to them sometimes on a Saturday morning because that's what worked. And we go through a series of either just conversations or reading something together or whatever. But in my journey in business and faith, having somebody who's willing to give up the time has been hugely important for me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing it was inevitable that you would follow somewhat certainly with the entrepreneurial genes and the investment in you with dad as a mentor, that you're going to go on the same path. Was it inevitable?
Well, growing up in the house, you know, sometimes you'd get in from school and you'd have a customer in the kitchen eating your dinner. So I remember quite often mum kind of shooing us upstairs and going, all right, we'll get our food later on. So there was a lot of fun in the house with them. It was hard work, right enough, but it was good fun. So sometimes you'd have, on a Friday, you'd get back in from school, you'd go into the workshops and have your dinner with the technicians and things like that and fish and chips and all that nonsense. So I loved all of the atmosphere of dealing with people and the kind of idea that you were selling. The whole retail thing I found fantastic. So getting somebody in the showroom, finding out what they want, giving them what they want, seeing them leave happy with what they've got, and you'd be part of it. I found a real buzz, actually. It was more that than the cars. It was the kind of retail experience. So because I enjoyed it, I tried to join the company. I worked every summer or every holiday in the parts department. So I tried to learn every department. And then I served petrol when I was 14. And then I got a chance to sell cars when I was 15. Which was much the amusement of most of the dealership, because I think they were all, and I kind of knew them all. So I'd grown up with quite a lot of them. And so it was a bit of a spectacle. How on earth is this going to go at 15? I remember this couple come in who were clearly retired. I couldn't do the test drive. Somebody else had to do the test drive. They looked at a Mazda 323 in brown. I remember the selling feature was it was power steering. I remember that's what I did. And anyway, they obviously knew what was going on, but they didn't let on. But buying a car from a 15-year-old, I'm sure, was quite unusual. So they went along with it, bless them, and they agreed to buy the car. And I wasn't expecting them to say buy it, because I'd never experienced that. So this was the thing I'd been waiting for all my life. And they said, yeah, no, we'll buy that off your son, no problem. And, of course, I leant back on my chair like that, and it snapped. And I don't know why all that happened, but anyway, because everybody was watching the dealership, they thought this was the best thing ever. So that was my first experience of selling cars. And then I got the bug, really. I think this idea of enjoying looking after people in retailing. I went and did a marketing degree at Strathclyde to learn how to do the marketing a bit. So that was my study. That was my work. I tried to leave every time I could do, but Dad kept saying, I don't have any jobs for anybody with GCSEs. Then I got A-levels. I don't have any jobs for anybody with A-levels. I said, well, I know you do, because there's like a lot of people now. But he said, no, you can't get a job unless you've got a degree. So I did a degree, and then I finished that. And he said, well, I don't actually need anybody unless I've got an honours degree. I thought, you're winding me up. Anyway, so I did the honours degree, and then went straight back and went to sell cars again and worked back by my way through. And it was brilliant. Regified is a fantastic story. And when it got sold, I remember being asked to come down for a family meeting. And that sounded awfully grand. I thought, we haven't had a family meeting before. So I drive down from Edinburgh, because I was running Edinburgh Jaguar at the time. At my first general manager job, my first site. And I got asked to come down. So I was the last one to get into the house, and all the family was sat around the table. And Dad said, we've had an approach, and it's a PLC, it's a public company. And so we have to give the shareholders the right advice. And so based on the price of the offer, I've got to say whether the shareholders should take that advice. The only other advice would to keep the shares and you'd earn more money in the future. And he says, I think the share price that's been offered to buy the company is more money than I can give the shareholders back if I keep running it. So I have to advise the shareholders to take it. Oh. So I was like, ooh, stabbed to the heart. I thought, well, hang on, I didn't expect anything from my jobs in the company, but I didn't expect anything different. I didn't have a plan of working anywhere else. It was always just a plan of keeping learning, keeping going. So of all of us, I was probably the one that was most invested in the car selling bit. I had my brothers and sisters. So I didn't quite know what to do with myself. So I wrote a strategy up to get my dad to sign off to give me a wee bit of investment. So he said no to the first two or three, I think. And then he said yes to that, the next one, which is trying to have the next generation motor group. And that's where I suppose I can bring my faith into the story a little bit, is if you're setting a company up and you're going to run a business, how are you going to run it as a Christian? So I was recently reminded of a story that somebody told me, which was in the Sistine Chapel. And I've never been to Sistine Chapel, but I'd love to go. But it said, if you go, Peter, the ceiling's really beautiful, which is what everybody goes for. But when you're in, they had a problem that when you walked in the Sistine Chapel and you looked up the ceiling, you couldn't look at it for very long. You couldn't see the full beauty of everything that was being painted because you couldn't look up that long. Your neck was cricked. So practically, you know, you could stay there and try, but you couldn't keep looking. So somebody had the bright idea who worked there of putting a mirror, circular mirrors on wheels, big mirrors, and they would wheel them into the Sistine Chapel. So all you needed to do was look in the mirror to see how beautiful the roof was. And somebody said to me that in business life, Peter, that's, or life generally, that's, you need to be the mirror. So you might not be able to be the preacher, which I certainly wasn't, and you might not be able to stand in the pulpit and have those kind of roles, but you can reflect who God is in what you do. So I thought, oh, well, that makes sense. I can try to do that. So when I set the business up, I set it with clear goals that I thought reflected what you're taught in the Bible, like love God, love other people, right? Get that bit. Quite a simplistic person, and I don't understand all the complexity of the Bible. I do understand the main bits. So I love God, love people. I can do that. So I thought, well, how do you do that in business? Quite straightforward. You try with three things. There's three areas of people in your business. One's that you employ, people that come into business and buy things off you, and the community that you're in. So quite straightforward, I can say the objectives of the organization are best place to work, makes total sense of business too, best place to buy, and then we had a last one about giving back in the communities. So we said, can we be world-class automotive organization as seen by the colleagues, the guests, and the communities we serve? Nailed. So I then thought, right, well, that's a way of getting my Christian faith practically in the business in a way that is beneficial for the business. So everybody was saying things like, is it really difficult to be a Christian in business? And I'm going, well, not really if you make the rules up, because if it's your own business, you can set out from the start, you know, what you think a Christian business would look like. And it's not perfect. The motor trade certainly isn't an area to have a namby-pamby, you know, easy Christian life and all that. It's quite hard-hitting. You know, it's a bit like construction. It's tough. But you can set out some vision and some goals that do reflect what Jesus says in the Bible. You can do that. And funnily enough, people are quite attracted by good news. And if the Bible is about full good news, although they don't know exactly what it is, they do like to be valued.
Yeah.
Funny that. And the Bible talks about loving people. Well, if I love folks, they do appreciate it. So we have a recent strategy in the business called Live Out Valuing Everybody, Love. And HR guys think, oh, that's a bit, you know, can you go there with a love phrase? Yeah, of course I can. You know, everybody wants valued. So we have a whole idea of physical well-being, mental well-being, spiritual well-being.
Love that.
And how do we encourage colleagues that they can, that they have, we've got their back? So we've got a chaplain, a lady called Shirley does a great job for us. So we've got an environment where people feel valued. And that's what I wanted to do in business. When you make people feel valued, the best people come work for you.
Yeah.
Customers buy from you and the community appreciate you being there and get involved. So we've seen loads of things. So we were sometimes best companies to work for. We did really well on that. Was it because we had the best strategy in the world? No, because I wouldn't be able to write the best strategy in the world. I'm not clever enough. But people felt valued. So they voted on how they felt valued, whether it was best place to work. We've done loads of things about the customer experience things, because guess what? Customers feel valued, because that's how we're valuing the colleagues.
Great.
And then in the charity world, we've got a couple of stories that maybe I was thinking about before I did this. But one of them was, I went to Cambodia when we first started. The laugh was with giving 10% of the money away when you started, because I borrowed the money from my dad, borrowed the money from the bank. And I said I was going to give the money away. But when you lose the money for the first 2 years, everyone's looking at you going, how are you going to give the money away that I've given you? Yeah. So I said, no, when I make some money, I'll give some of it away. So we got into making money relatively quickly, just as well. And a few of us had been to Cambodia to help an organization called Hagar. And the organization in Cambodia was rescuing women and children clearly from abused backgrounds. Yeah. And as you can see on the TV programs, white Westerners doing the wrong things in some of these countries. Mm. You've seen those stories before. So we were trying to stop the trafficking. So we went across, we helped them out, this organization. Now, I don't know how much help we actually were. We thought we were loads of help, but the intention was there. And then we had raised some money the year. And I remember we had like £50,000, 230 quid or something like that. And it was something like that still left. And Ewan Cameron, who's a friend of mine who worked with us a long time, came in and said, this is a year after going to Hagar. We've got some money left in the foundation. Then what do we do with this? So the idea was to give the money away. So I'm not entirely sure. And anyway, in the space of that one day of having the conversation about the money, we got an email from this Hagar organization saying, just want to let you know, thanks so much for the help you gave us last year, but unfortunately we've got to close down. And I'm thinking, that's horrendous. The work they were doing was unbelievable. I mean, I met some of the women and kids that were getting rescued. I mean, it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So I think I wrote back, or Ewan wrote back, one of us, and said, look, what's been the problem? Well, we had to wait quite a while because we had basically a court order on from the government. If we didn't give them £50,000, £230, we were going to get evicted. So we've just run out of time. We just can't get it. You know, that's the outstanding amount. And Ewan's going to me, how much did we say we had again? I said, £50,230. It was there. So we just sent it back. And the woman... It was exactly the same number. I mean, we sent the money back and they wrote back and said, of course, all the joy happened because they could stay and they could pay the money back. And so we've had experiences like that with the foundation. We've had, it's not a particularly original idea, Christmas presents for Christmas, but we got into another amazing guy that was working for us, Martin Belshaw, now works for Salvation Army. He was my first chaplain in the company when there wasn't very many of us. And bless him, we worked his socks off to try and do the right thing or give him back. But one, I said, look, we just started. Why did we give Christmas presents away? So I think we start with 50. Saying, let's just drop 50 Christmas presents away. Oh, good, right. So then that worked quite well. And all the colleagues were wrapping the boxes. And there wasn't many. There's only maybe one dealership. And then the following year came around to the house again. I said, you know the 50 thing we did? I've just got a funny feeling that should be like 500. And he went, oh, no, Pierre, you're kidding. I said, no, we can do 500. So anyway, we found a way of doing 500. We managed to get a family, the Cash and Carry, to do us a special deal in the Cash and Carry, give us one of their units. And then we spoke to not just our parts of Anza, but other people, and we were delivering 500. We thought that was wonderful. Anyway, the story continued till we got to 10,000, right?
Wow.
Martin lost all his hair and all this kind of thing. So, and so with these are getting delivered everywhere. The one deal was we weren't allowed to say, when we delivered the boxes, you couldn't have your uniform for a start, and you couldn't be in a vehicle with our name on. So nobody could know it was us, was the plan.
That was your decision, was it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everything we did with the foundation was that, because it says in the Bible, doesn't it? It's not, you know. So these gifts were getting given out by the colleagues, jumping in, taking their uniforms off, dropping things off. The only was that at that point, some of our cars were black, so sometimes thought we were the mobsters coming into the local areas delivering things out. But we had a deal with the fact that we got reported once, who's these guys coming in black cars? No, they actually do have Christmas presents. It's not done. Anyway. Transpired, this went on for years, right? And nobody knew it was us, apart from the colleagues, which made it even more special for everybody.
Yes.
And I was, the giving back thing, this is maybe a story about where the giving back thing works in different ways than you think. I went to try and get the Jaguar Land Rover franchise. And getting the franchise is a big deal. You know, that's an amazing brand. We were trying to get the biggest dealership in Great Britain, and we were just growing at the time as a group. So we weren't really in the running for it. It shouldn't have really been. And I remember going down the meeting in Birmingham, and I went down with my finance director, managing director. He had this big presentation on PowerPoint, obviously, as he did. And I tried to walk in the room, tried to plug this thing in, and all these directors then suddenly came in from Jaguar Land Rover. And the year before, I decided to close on Sundays, right, which is the busiest day in the motor trade in Scotland. So it's not really economically the best thing to do. So guy came in, the first thing he said was... you close on Sundays, don't you? I said, yeah. I hadn't actually plugged in yet. I hadn't sat down. He went, yeah. I went, yeah, yeah. He said, I wouldn't buy a car off you. And I'm the sales director. I said, okay. I can explain to you about the closing on Sundays if you want me to. No, I'm not bothered. The next guy came in and said, you got rid of all the uniforms, the suits and everything. I said, yeah, because we're all part of one team. We all wear the same thing. No, I don't agree with that. So I got kicked under the table by my finance director thinking this is a disaster, right? Which it clearly was. Meanwhile, the PowerPoint still wouldn't plug in. I couldn't get the wire in the thing. And then suddenly the door went, right, with the tea lady. So she just knocked the door with the trolley. So you're like, poof. So then everybody turned around. Thankfully, we were distracted. And then I said, well, I'll serve the teas. And I looked at Claire, the finance director. I said, look, would you mind plugging the thing in to see if we can get this thing going? And then suddenly the projector came on as I was pouring the tea in the corner. And of all the things that came on the screen, it somehow, unless you meant it to happen, I don't think she did, the giving back section came up on the slide deck first. I mean, clearly that's not the most important thing in a business presentation.
Yeah.
But we're culturally talking about what we're about. And the slide that came up had this letter on it. And I saw the letter and I thought, well, this is going to change things. Because the letter, it was obviously a photograph of the letter. And the letter was amazing. It was from somebody who'd received the Christmas gift, right, the year before. And the letter managed to get back to us through social services over a course of months because they didn't know it was us, but through somebody to get back to my desk. And I opened this one day in the office, and of course the tears are rolling down your face. Then I handed it to somebody else in the office. They couldn't stop crying. So this letter went around the office and everybody was in floods of tears. And it was all about this lady who'd received some boxes. And all she could write was, these people came to my door with some boxes. They then dropped them off to their delivery company. We then were able to have a Christmas, which we weren't like planning having a Christmas. It went through, the backstory was she was about to take her own life, and she was the last one. Her husband had passed away. She was the last one. The two kids wouldn't have had any career. And so the whole story was about how this act of kindness had really been the spark to get her back, you know, back on track. So when this letter came up, I'm thinking, well, they're going to cry. And this might change the meme. Of course, fair enough. They did start crying because they started scoffing and spluttering in their teeth. And I'm thinking, right, well, what happens now then? So I kind of went back around to my seat and said, would you like me to start the presentation now? Oh, yes, yes, please start the presentation. So anyway, we got to the end of the presentation and left. And I thought, oh, that was all right in the end. It was a bit of a disaster of a start, but kind of went okay. Got back to Bentbury Airport. Then I was walking up the stairs on the plane. Now, bear in mind that trying to get a franchise takes a long time. It doesn't happen in a day. And it certainly doesn't happen a day if you're not really due to get it. It's the biggest one in the UK, and you fluffed your lines for the first half hour. So going up the stairs, the phone went. So I said to the guys, you go up the stairs, I'll wait at the bottom. And it was a call from the manager director to say, just to let you know, we think that's wonderful. We'd love you to have the franchise.
What?
So we managed to get the franchise today. So it's a lot of the looking after colleagues, looking after guests, doing the foundation stuff, we've just seen some miracles in all of them between people giving up the time who didn't know about giving back.
Yeah.
So we now have, we're well over one day per year giving back per colleague, well over that.
Mm.
And that would be most organisers. But so there's more giving back happens in our company now than I ever know about. I don't know what they're doing anymore. They tell me afterwards, and the charity's ringing me and said, I've just had your guys over doing my flat up, or just had the guys. So you've got a culture of people giving and a culture of kindness. And I do think that's if you set the vision and the strategy up at the beginning, you tell people what the values are, you give them values cards, you duck them on the values. So even when people on the first day of work with us, when they come in, we said, this is what the family's about. This is what the business is about, is giving. So there's a blank check for £100. I know it's your first day with us. What is it you'd want us to write to give to? You write down what it is and we'll send the check on your behalf. So if you're generous and kind with values and some structure, it's not nonsense giving. We're structured with it. We're diligent with it, as you're supposed to be. You can create a culture that I think is reflective of the leadership style you're supposed to see in the Bible.
Yeah.
And it is attractive. You know, and I've got evidence to say people like working in that environment. So I've had a lot of joy in trying to follow what I think the Bible tells you about leadership and then translated that into running a business.
Oh, so good. And I love it when that clear biblical principle of the Lord honors those who honor him. You've seen that repeatedly. Can you share any other stories?
Yeah, I mean, I think God's answered. I've been so fortunate with answered prayers in loads of different ways. I mean, from a personal level, Anna and I were, so my wife's called Anna. We tried for kids, didn't work. So we went to IVF, which I'm not really sure we were that keen on doing IVF. But we went anyway, because that's the thing to do. And then the guy actually sat us down and said, well done. We've got to this stage and everything. Great. So I've got to tell you the truth and I need you to remember this conversation. No, right. Okay. So yeah, no problem. IVF's never going to work for you. It doesn't matter where you go, how many times you go. If you go to another clinic, it will never, ever work. So you'll keep trying and you'll keep paying lots of money out, but it'll never work, ever work. I kept saying that again. I kept saying it over again. So please don't, please take this as the full and final. It stops today and don't put yourself through it because it'll never work. I went on, I said, I get it. I kept going on and on. I said, I hear you. I hear you the first time. So Adam and I got in the car and we're driving back from this part of Glasgow, back to north of Glasgow where we live. And I said to Adam on the phone, I said, look, we really need to pray about this. And I'd rather pray about it than all of that thing I've just heard. And for a laugh in the car, I didn't like the mood. I said, well, why don't we go to the Cayman Islands? Because we've been at a wedding the week before where we sat next to someone. You ever sit at the wedding where someone doesn't shut up at a wedding? This guy hadn't shut up about the Cayman Islands and all. So it was kind of slightly amusing that we had to put up with that for 3 hours. So I said, oh, of all the things we do, why don't we go to the Cayman Islands? So we trotted off to Cayman Islands for Christmas, which was a real treat. And it got to Christmas Eve, which was the Sunday. And I said to Anna, well, come on, let's go to church. And so I went down to reception and I said, is there any churches on the island? And the guy kind of smoked at me and pulled this massive list out and said, yeah, it's quite a lot, actually. So I just said, Baptist church, that'll be fine. So yeah, there's one there. So we got the taxi through the Baptist church. Anyway, a nice kind of open air, kind of round building type thing. And I remember the building really well. Went in and there was people were very friendly, Christmas Eve. So we sat down, the guy said, our church is really into praying at the minute. We really want to pray for people. This particular year as well, it's going to be our year of prayer. So you've got some cards on your seat. Could you just fill in any prayer points and make sure you give them back? We'll not let you get out the door unless he tells what you're praying for. It was really good. So Anna wrote on the back of the card, there's a wee girl called Sophia who's in hospital in Glasgow, sick kids, just when we were there, and she was very poorly. And then she must have written on the back of the card, which I didn't see, that obviously we were told we couldn't have any kids. So we had the holiday, we got home, and about 2 weeks later, we got this letter from the church. Oh. And I can't actually remember giving them our address, but anyway, we must have done. And the letter said, thanks so much for coming to church on this day. Here's the two prayer points written out, typed out. Here is the 10 people by name, named them, that will be praying for you at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday until you tell us to stop. I was like, wow. What amazing. I wish I'd written letters like that before. I've never written anything like that. So, of course, Sophia got out of hospital. So Anna straight away wrote back. So they were, you know, thanks so much. And then we had a baby that year as well.
Wow.
So where are we, Harriet? So I remember they got to the November time that year. And I said to Dad, look, we were away last year for Christmas. What do you want to do this Christmas? And he went, well, I know what we're doing. I don't know. He said, I know what you're doing. I said, oh, do you? Right, okay. I must have missed the WhatsApp chat or whatever. What are we doing? He said, we're all the entire family going back to that church. So all of us en masse, my sister, brother, all the relatives, we all went back to Cayman Islands. We'd never been to Cayman Islands before, apart from me and Anna. So my entire family went back to Cayman Islands that year. And it was fortunate that Christmas Day was the Sunday. So we were able to go on Christmas Day and go and thank all the people that I pray for.
Beautiful.
So... yeah, we'd be pretty faithful. My dad says we need to go back now and stop. Tell him to stop praying because after having four now, we need no more. So we're very, very fortunate. I feel really blessed on that as well. So from a business point of view, I've seen God's hand in what I've done. Sometimes I've not understood. You know, latterly, God's changed the plan of what I was going to do in business because I had a pretty straightforward trajectory. And maybe this resonates with somebody who things aren't going according to plan at the moment, or you don't quite understand. I had a quite clear plan of where I was going to go in business, and some things didn't go exactly as I wanted to do. And I was faced with a strategic decision of, right, well, I have to really grow the company now, or what else do I do? And I diversified the business at this point to add software businesses, add a finance business, add dealerships as well. So it was ended up being quite a clever business in some things that we'd done. It was some right clever people in it. But the dealership thing was our bread and butter, as everyone knows. And I remember strategically thinking as a team, well, we're a bit of a crossroads here. What do we do? And then thinking for God, well, hang on, why am I at this crossroads? This isn't the plan. This is not a plan. This is not the plan that I expected to be having to have a discussion about the crossroads of what I'm doing in my dealership. So I remember I was trying to go and get the Kia franchise as one of the ways of sorting this crossroads out where I was going to go. And I was in the room really early. And I don't know if anybody's ever taught you about, you know, these holy people kneel down all day and pray for everything, right? And I would like to be a holy person, but I'm not really that holy. Anyway, I found these cards in the room, you know, these note cards that you write on for speeches and everything. So I thought, oh, I seem to be really early. So why didn't I try that nailing down the room thing? So I wrote all the cards out of all the things that were on this kind of crossroads in my life, that all the things that were going on. I said, God, if this isn't exactly as I imagine it to be, and I can't see where you're going, how about I just pray all day for this? So I wrote on every card all the things in my life that are on the go. And there was pretty real things on there and everything. So I started to pray and realized your knees get sore if you start praying for a long time. So I went and got the slippers from the bathroom and knelt on the slippers. So it wasn't quite so difficult. And then I prayed over all of these cards about what God would do. And one of them was about taking things away. Like, well, I'm somebody that starts businesses and build them up. And I think, well, that's exactly the opposite of what I want to pray for. Anyway, I prayed over it, and that's the card I remember. And I started to see God taking some things away to clearly do what he wanted to do going forward. But you don't know sometimes what he's doing. And having to have the faith to say, look, this is not the plan I want to do, but I do have to trust you, and I will do what you're telling me to do, knowing that he's got a better plan. So at the stage I'm in now, I feel as if I know where I'm going, but there's still that stage in life where it's not exactly as I expected it to be in business. So things have been successful. I can't begrudge anything, but it isn't quite the plan I thought God would have for me. So at the minute, spending quite a lot of time getting people around me to give me advice, prayed over what's going on, leaning into what God wants to do, really trusting him, and trying to make sure my diary looks like it should do. If somebody was following Jesus, does my diary look like somebody followed Jesus? Is it what Jesus, if Jesus looked at the diary, would be happy with the way I've set it out? Because when I manage my time the right way, then the things happen. So I've just gone through a stage at the minute with trusting God and what does he want me to do next? And if it's a different playbook than the one I've been used to doing, I suppose kind of excited what that looks like, but also slightly nervous about, well, what God, if you didn't take me the direction I thought you were going to take me, I know you've got plans that are better than I would ever imagine. So I need to get excited about what's happening next and just trust you on what's going on. So, but living in that, we slightly more uncertain times of what God's doing, but trying to lean into understanding what he wants me to do, what the priorities are and his plans are, and trying to be patient, I suppose.
Oh, that's gold. Hey folks, I hope you're enjoying the podcast. Listen, a few things to offer to you. We've got the Inspired book that came out last year. That's 7 of the Inspired podcast stories in book form. Great for teenagers or just light holiday reading in general. Choose Life is a daily devotional I came out with a number of years ago. Tens of thousands of journey through that for a year or a number of years in written form, but my publishers have allowed me to put it on the web for free. So we've got a whole group doing that either daily or weekly through the year. If you wanted that for free, go to chooselife.org.uk. And I think many of you know this, but a lot are new to the podcast. It comes out in the auspices of Great Lakes Outreach, working in Burundi, which is the hungriest country in the world. And so masses of needs are involved in 30 organizations out there. And, you know, this podcast actually funds about 5 of those organizations, which is absolutely stunning. If you want to support the work, if you're just so enjoying and benefiting from the joy that comes from the podcast, then go to greatlakesoutreach.org/inspired. And I'd love it. You know, 10 quid, 20 bucks, whatever a month goes such a long way out there. So it's greatlakesoutreach.org/inspired. So good to be part of this international community, bringing blessing to the nations. God bless you. Now let's get back to the podcast. Hey, how about this one? I would say in my personal experience, I've learned greatest lessons when it has been uncomfortable, a bit like you've talked about there, but and from failure.
Can you
think of times where, you know, what has been a failure instead of being a stumbling block becomes a stepping stone in your growth?
Yeah, my personality is one where I quite like to deal in chaos. So if you like the chaos of a young business, where everybody does every job and you have to just work things out together, which is startups. That's quite a unique skill. Not many people like the chaos because you don't know what hours you work and there's no structure to the day. Yeah. Anything can happen. You've got to pivot quite quickly if something doesn't work. Well, that's my personality. So you chuck me into that and I love that. So COVID for me, from a leadership point of view, brought the best out of me, weirdly. And it was an interesting one on COVID because when you're in a crisis, it does help you get closer to God, doesn't it? You really do take away all the layers of the onion and get to the key thing, don't you? Because you've got nothing left.
How many people have you got at this stage that you're looking out for?
1,500.
Yeah, wow.
So the COVID one was a really difficult difficult one sense, but then quite good another, because I didn't have anywhere to go apart from rely on God, right? So I remember sitting in my study. I haven't told this story, really. So I sat in my study, and I rang Dad up and said, Dad, would you pray with me every day at 3 o'clock? Yeah, no problem. So I said, I banked the prayer thing. I rewrote my to-do list and what I was going to get through when I woke up in the morning. So between getting exercise, some time with God to pray, what we're doing in the Bible, notes I got from the Bible, prayer points I have. So it started with God spending a lot of time with him. Got 3 o'clock, had a prayer point in the diary every day. We pray about what was happening at COVID. And this was before the furlough money and all that was announced, right?
Yeah.
So, right, this is a bit of a nightmare. So I worked out relatively quickly, because my mental fatigue is all right, how valuable the company was in terms of what I had left in the company. So I rang Dad and said, if we're going to try and look after the colleagues, because I said that at the beginning, the story was at the beginning, which I told you, best place to work. That's all good when it's happy, clappy, taking people to incentive trips and all that. But when it comes to brass tacks, though, and this is probably the time where it came home to roost the most, if you're going to look after people, this is the time. I thought, right, okay. So I rang Dad and said, Dad, I think this is what this was all about. I remember the conversation. I think this is what this is all about, this business thing. I think this is the time I've got to look after all the colleagues. And this is when everybody was going home, businesses were closing, all this. So I rang him and said, look, I'd heard a friend in the 2008 financial crisis, one of the companies like KPMG, I think it was, put everyone in a four-day week. And because they weren't sure what was going to happen. And one of my friends thought that, I rang him, said, that's really harsh. He said, no, it's the best thing that's ever happened. I've got a job. I can pay my bills. It's all they can do. Absolutely fine. So I rang Dad and said, look, I remember this, the last crisis I saw was a four-day week. So what I'm going to propose, Dad, is absolutely mad, but hear me out. I'm going to continue to pay everybody for 4 days a week until the money runs out. And he went, what? I said, well, I don't know when we're going to open again. I says, I know, but I can go for 10 months, 11 days, and then it's all gone. So I said, so he went, okay, so that's what you think you should do? I said, yeah. And then I'll just have to start again. So I went and did a video with the colleagues, and I said, I know everyone's worried about things, but I said, well, why don't you go home today, and this is what we're going to do. So they played the video and all the dealerships and all the business we had. There's obviously quite a lot of tears because people didn't know what was going to happen, didn't know if they were going to lose their job and all that stuff. And then we did it. We sent everybody home. So then I thought, right, well, okay, now we're on a ticking time bomb here. This is going to go. So I said to the team, I got everyone's at home. So I got a team of people together, senior leaders, and said, well, we're not going to give up that easy. We can't give up that easy. We will do it, and we'll do it. But if it's going to be a fight, we're going to fight right to the last minute. So we're going to sell half the cars we normally sell when we're open, when we're closed. And they went, what? I said, no, I just thought this morning. We're going to sell 1,000 cars a month. And they all looked at me and went, Pete, we don't have the dealerships open. I said, no. No. But so what the challenge is, how can we sell 1,000 cars a month? Well, they must have all thought I was crackers. But did I see a team effort to get it? Oh, my word. I've never seen anybody galvanize as much as possible. So guess what? We sold 1,000 cars a month, didn't we?
Wow. Uh-huh.
So through being closed, through promising to look after people, we saw miraculous things in selling cars. And we were selling 1,000 cars a month. We had a bit of software that helped people buy cars online themselves. I gave it away to all the dealerships of Great Britain. It's a normally competitive advantage, isn't it? We gave it away. And again, another element of testimony
yeah.
about generosity. And people never forgot that. We gave them the ability to sell cars when they weren't open. So through COVID, we saw more people engaged in online project teams than I've ever imagined. We had more effort going in. It was a real success story about being faithful. And so a friend of mine, really good actually. So if you look at our logo as a company, it's a kind of V. It's 3 points and it goes into, it's quite cool actually. And young designer designed it once. And I looked down, after all this was going on and everything, and I'm thinking, right, well, this is out of my control now. I've done everything in my control. Everything now is out of my control. And as a business leader, as an entrepreneur, that's not a comfortable place to be, clearly. Not with 1,500 staff. And so I turned my key ring over and I looked down at the table. And this was genuinely, I'm not a massively spiritual person. I'd love to burn down, right? But I looked up a key ring and I heard God say, that's not a V, by the way. And never was. I was like, all right. And if you look at it, it looks like angel wings, right? And he said, I've been looking after you the whole time. I get the picture. Just hang on. So he said, you might think you're doing this on your own, but I've been looking after you the whole time. Mm. And so it was angel wings, you know? So a friend of mine did a picture of the company and he changed the V into these angel wings.
Yeah.
And over all my businesses.
Beautiful.
So anyway, sometimes when you think you're in control, it's quite nice to know that God's in control instead.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing, buddy. Let's move on to your leadership stuff, because I know you're passionate about the topic of leadership and youth opportunities. So tell us why that's a focus and what you're doing in those areas.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, we've been fortunate to earn some money and then saying, right, well, God, what do you want me to do? How do you want me to steward what you're giving me? So the foundation was set up quite early doors. We've had some wonderful stories with that, mostly around, you know, early intervention. So often you're really helping young people out. So young people in crisis all over the world, trying to do a lot of stuff locally so people don't think we send the money abroad all the time. Mm-hmm. But as you'd know, with foundations, the money goes quite a long way abroad as well. So you've got to try and talk about impact. You do things at home and then you try and do the right things abroad. One of the things we did once, I was away with my brother in Uganda, and my brother had paid for a school, which is great. So a certain amount of money paid for a school up in the mountains. So I went to open that over one weekend with my brother. The guy in the car said, look, my company's not very big. I said, but we are growing. So if I give you 10% of the profits for the next 2 years towards your work, can you help more young people out in Uganda? Well, needless to say, we had two record years, which I wasn't expecting. And we sent the guy the check after the first quarter. And he rang me back and said, that's amazing, but you seem to send me the wrong check because that's our five-year giving plan and you've sent it in 3 months. And I said, well, yeah, we've had a better start than I thought. And I said, I'll give you 10%. So anyway, this happened for 2 years. And I never got, and obviously I got the reports in to see what happened with the money. We were diligent. But normally I would have gone back to see what happened. And I hadn't a chance, the team had, but I hadn't a chance to go back. So I went back about 4 years later because I was expecting to go back. And I've never seen anything like it. And they talk about God having set a plan where you just have to say yes to it and then he will do the rest, right? Mm. So yes was the answer in the car. And I got there 4 years later. We'd help 24,000 kids out.
Wow.
We'd attend 25 schools, we'd fed the children every day, we'd clothed the children in uniform, we'd then paid for all the books, it went on and on. The teachers had then got paid, the teachers had been for training, they'd done community work, then they bought fields, they'd grown their own crops, they weren't buying crops, it went on and on and on. And it was like an assault on the senses when I got there. I thought, wow, right, okay. And then they took us to some of the schools, and not just, you go into a school where you expect a lot of kids, yeah. I've got the videos, I couldn't get out of the car. Because two of us, me and Shirley, tried to get out of the car and the whole town had come out. And so between the road into the school, it was just like, what's happened there? So we've had some great experiences just doing, saying yes at the right time, what God says. So one of the things we tried to say yes to in Scotland was leadership for young people in schools. So if you think about some of us and maybe some of us not on the call, have you had good advice trying to make key decisions in your life? And there's a lot of analogies about your life as just a series of decisions and all this kind of stuff. Well, I'm sure there's an element of truth in that because I know it myself. You get to crossroads and you want somebody with good advice to give you the right advice. I often think kids don't often always have the best advice. So if you turn that into leadership, how do you make the right decision about where you lead yourself? I was writing a 10-year plan for the group and woke up in the middle of the night and... So I think the thing to do is to put some of the money from the foundation into training the next generation leaders. Start with the young. How do you train all the leaders? So I know some people picked specific things that they're interested in giving to, which is wonderful, and what's on your heart. So it could be homelessness or whatever. My idea was to try and find something that would multiply. So if I could help a whole generation of young people or whatever their gifts were, if I could help them make better decisions, then whatever they went into in life, they make better decisions in that situation. So with my sister, we put together a program called Gen Plus, which is a meta skills program. So it meets the Scottish curriculum, what the Scottish curriculum wants. So it means we can get it into schools. And that is teaching kids how to make better decisions. So we are trying to get to 370,000 kids in schools.
Wonderful.
With a digital product called Gen Plus. So that's a Scottish way. It can go all over the world because it's online. So if anybody wants anything that's listening, that I think the material, because it's 52 lessons, they are absolutely world-class for 7 to 13-year-olds. I mean, it's fabulous stuff that's written because my sister's a teacher and her friends have got together, put together. It's just amazing. So that's trying to go into all schools in an area that not many foundations want to go into because funders need to see results and stats.
Right. Yeah.
And that's easier at exam times. It's more difficult when they're 7 to 13 because you're not getting as many stats back from schools. But we thought that age was more impressionable. So we've gone after that rather than the stats. So that's Gen Plus. That's in the schools. We're excited about that in Scotland. And then I was fortunate enough when I first started the company to go to a place called Willow Creek, which ran a global leadership summit, which was for church folk and non-church folk. Ran out of, and it went to about 100,000 people. I think primarily, really, to help pastors learn from all people from all walks of life. But then all walks of life went, there's not many places I can hear quite so many good leadership lessons, so I'm going to go to it. So I went along with a whole lot of guys from the business. And each year, if they weren't from a faith background, I'd say, well, it's pretty obvious which talk is a Christian one because it says reverent in front of it. So you can miss that one and, and go the ones you want. But we had such a good time as business leaders learning from the latest keynote speakers and things. That I thought, well, why don't we run a kind of UK version of that? So yes, the foundation will put the event on, and yes, it's got we have Christian values, but how do we play it straight down the line so everybody can come? And going back to that mirror analogy of being a Christian, of being a mirror, can we just have a testimony like the business was? I don't have to preach it all the time in a business. You just have to demonstrate and have a testimony.
Yeah.
Because then everybody would come, you know. So in October the 2nd, which is a Friday, we have booked the Armadillo, which is a big venue in Glasgow. We've got the best events company. We've got the best production company. We're flying 5 speakers in from the States. We've got Sir Chris Hoy going to speak at it. We've got a mixture of folks that from the faith background as well. And the idea is that we are teaching through a series of almost like TED Talks, 8 or 9 sessions on the stage on Friday morning from 9 o'clock till about 4:30. We're trying to listen. So we're talking about being inspired, equipped, and commissioned to go and lead. So can we get some of the best leaders from around the world to talk about values-based leadership, teaching people the truth about how to lead? So the leaders that we're expecting to come are people with influence. So it could be a mum or dad, could be a football coach, could be somebody from the church, could be a business person. And I genuinely believe it would be one of the best places, well, maybe the first time ever in Scotland, we've had a values-based leadership conference in Scotland. Of that quality. I'm really trying to, you know, as Christians, you're always supposed to do things the best ability.
I'm
trying to do this the best we possibly can. And the night before, which is the 1st of October, which is a Thursday night, there's been loads of answers to prayer in this, by the way. It's hilarious. So I said, well, why don't we try and invite people to come and pray for the Friday? Because it'd be really nice to pray for the 3,000 leaders that we're hoping to get on the Friday. Yeah. So we kind of opened it up to churches. By the churches got excited about it, though. About all meeting together under one roof to pray for Scotland, to pray for the leaders of Scotland. So now I think we can get 3,000 people together from all different church backgrounds.
So good.
On the Thursday night. So Michael W. Smith just so happened to be in Manchester the night before. So he's going to come up and do a concert. Nicky Gumbel's coming up. We've got some of the key Scottish church leaders who take part, obviously. We've asked Pete Gregg to come. We're just waiting on to see if he can come on prayer. So, and then Celtic Worship come for the band. So between 6:30 and like 9:30, I think this place is going to be, I'm praying, really, you know, sometimes as a Christian, you pray, you know, this idea that heaven meets earth for a while and you're just part of that. You're just there and you can take it all in. So that's Thursday night. And I was laughing because I was kind of, you know, you have these, maybe it's immature faith sometimes, you have this view of the Holy Spirit's hanging around between the night and the morning and still being there when you come in the morning, you know. Yeah. And so we've got 100 volunteers from Youth for Christ coming. So they're going to host the Friday. So anybody come from any walk of life is going to be met at the front door and welcomed in on the Friday. And then you'll be inspired and equipped and commissioned to be a leader in Scotland or wherever you're coming from on the Friday.
Mm.
So it's called the revival.scot on the Thursday. And there's a website called thecalling.scot where you can book a ticket. So you can get your tickets for both of those events. And also, helpfully on the website, will be how to find a venue to stay in. So there'll be deals for places to stay and how to get around and logistics. So try to make it as easy as possible. But we're hoping for 3,000 people on the Thursday night and 3,000 people on the Friday. And if we can do that this year, we'll hope to do it in years coming, in the future years as well.
Woo! Well, if you're watching on video, you've just seen me having a massive cheesy grin for the last 10 minutes listening to that, because that is so up my street. I mean, funny enough, last week in Burundi, with that same stuff, GLS, Global Leadership Summit, I think outside of Africa, we are the best movement. So the government, we've had 2,500 people. We only invited 2,000. 2,500 showed up. All of them were all of them were catered for. You know, there's no massive sort of facilities out there in terms of conference facilities. And the government has said, we want you guys, we want Christian leadership development, and we want it in the police, in the military, and all our civil servants. So we're on this incredible opportunity because it is great material. And so I can just vouch for that. And guys, whew, we're going to put those details in the blurb. But if you're, well, if you're in Scotland for a start, you've got no excuse not to show up. But, you know, if you're across the UK and further afield, may it be packed up. It sounds like it's going to be a spectacular event. So bring it on. Peter, listen, we've run out of time. I've loved this conversation. I've loved listening to you. Give us your parting shot.
I think, you know, I was in a taxi. I'd organised my sister's 40th birthday this year. And we were having meals in the hotel, as you do. But one night I thought, we'd get the taxi to go down the hill to try somewhere else, just to give a bit of variety. And I got in the taxi with this guy, and I sat in the front seat as everybody else sat in the back. And I just noticed something different about him. So I said, I hope you don't mind this question, but are you a Christian? And he went, yeah. And he was in the taxi for 5 minutes, but I'm sure I met an angel. And I've never said that before. But at one point, he turned around to me and said, Peter, isn't the love of God intoxicating? So much so that you've got to go and tell everybody. Isn't that what you've got to do? And I thought, I should be feeling more like that. I need to know that God's love is intoxicating. It fills you up so much so that you have to go and tell everybody. So my mission going into next year is that to take that as a bit of instruction, you know, to realize how to really feel God's love in its fullness, and then make sure I'm telling people about it.
Brilliant. Love just pondering on that. Guys, this has been a fantastic conversation. So listen, can you gossip it with your mates? Can you, yeah, just get it out there? Can you give us a great review on Spotify, iTunes? It just means more people are going to come across it on the algorithm and be stirred. I mean, goodness, yeah, so much gold in this last hour we've had together. So listen, Peter Vardy, you're a star. We cheer you on. Thanks so much.
Thank you. God bless.
Brilliant. Guys, next week, a very different story. But in the meantime, just go for it. Intoxicated in love of Jesus. All for him. Whatever skill set, whether you're in business or whether you're a mum raising your kids, discipling them, whether you're in politics, education, media, the arts, whatever. I love Colossians 3:23. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. As for who? As for the Lord, not for people. And so that we put the excellence in Jesus' name is a key attribute, I think, of followers of Jesus. All for his glory. Okay, God bless you. Have a good week and toodaloo.